League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Aggression. I'm Pierce. As always, Rob and Chris are joining me. We're going to talk about a few things today. We got a couple of major anniversaries in the world of wrestling. One 25 years ago, another 10 years ago. So we'll talk about both of those. We'll also talk about the debut of the Diamond Mine, which I am very glad I popped into NXT in the last 5 minutes. Need to go back and watch the last 25 minutes because I'm sure Kushida and Kyle O'Reilly rocked the house at the Capitol Wrestling Center.
Oh, yeah.
I figured so. I assume they matched up against one another, like in Best of Super Juniors or something like that.
Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They wrestled in 2015 and 2016 in the Best of Super Juniors tournament.
All right. I got something to go back and watch on New Japan Pro Wrestling. So we'll talk about that and the debut of Diamond Mind. We will also go back in time to the year 2005, we have a pay-per-view to talk about, and it's a sneaky good one. Vengeance 2005, we'll dive into it, and the two latest draftees in the year 2005, and we're going week by week with that in the month of June. But let's begin with the fallout from Hell in a Cell. The usual fall pay-per-view moved up to the beginning of summer. Final Thunderdome pay-per-view. What'd you guys think of the final Thunderdome pay-per-view?
I mean, it was fine. Like, I think the two cell matches stood out. And
KO
Zane was good. And I mean, it was just kind of there, you know? I don't know. Like,
KO Sami Zayn, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed KO Zane. I mean, they're both phenomenal. I think they're both going to end up, even Owens or Zane, were both will end up being great bookers one day. Because their minds for wrestling, I mean, it's just,
yeah.
They've been fighting for like 10 years in different promotions, and all of their matches.
15, just, probably, yeah. Maybe 20.
Yeah, 15, yeah, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cell matches were standouts. I was sports entertained, and you know, the middle of the show was fine. There was no.
All right, can we talk about one Hell in a Cell match before we talk about the others?
Sure.
Specifically, the one that you didn't want to happen, but you got anyway. What did you think of Bayley and Bianca? I thought they did a good job opening a match. They did some real cool shit we haven't seen before.
Yeah, what I've noticed about all the women's Hell in a Cell matches is that their creativity in them is always off the charts, and this one didn't disappoint in that regard. I was only a little surprised. I knew the result, and I think everybody did. That there wasn't just a little bit more injection of drama in it, but I thought it was great. Bayley's a saint for taking that KOD on the ladder. That's a sick bump to take. Nasty. But obviously she's been, you know, full-throatedly putting over Bianca every chance that she can get. Obvious reasons. She's an incredible talent. Coming out of it, you know, Bianca, fantastic. Bayley, I'm curious to see where she's moving on to. I think she'll be in Money in the Bank. She was in the advertisement. I think she'll be in the ladder match. That'll be fun. I wouldn't pick her to be the favorite. We'll talk about that in a bit. I'm more interested in seeing what she does after that.
Do you think she's going to Money in the Bank? Has she qualified yet?
I'd
say that's not until SmackDown. So.
Yeah, that's not until SmackDown. And they don't have enough people to do qualifying matches anyway, so they'll probably just announce the names. And people will get faintly outraged about that.
So on that note, let's talk about the women's Money in the Bank match. So far, we got Asuka, Naomi, Nikki Cross, and Alexa Bliss. So we got four on the Raw side, the four on the SmackDown side. What, Bayley, Carmella.
Yeah.
Liv Morgan and the tag titles are kind of locked into a thing there.
Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if Mia Yim surfaced.
Yeah.
Only because she'd been posting that she got like her hair colored blue again. She seems to be getting ready to be back on TV. Would not surprise me if she was named a participant in that match, to be honest.
And I also wonder, like, do you really need a fourth SmackDown superstar? Like, couldn't you do a one chancery with like Shayna Baszler and a few other girls, and then it's like double branded?
Yeah,
I think it depends. I think the roster situation obviously with SmackDown is not great. That goes without saying.
Well, I guess I was mainly saying that because like I don't think the thing with her and Alexa is done by any means.
Yeah,
I'm curious about that too.
Well. You know, if you look at it from like a point of view, like Raw gets more draft picks because it's a longer show, so it has a bigger roster. You could technically get away with, you know, going 5-3. So that's interesting because SmackDown, you know, it's hard to come up with.
But I mean, do we really think that they're going to put Natty and Tamina against Dana and Mandy on the first big show with fans? I could easily see them just slotting Natalya in and just, you know,
yeah,
that'd be whatever. They're probably going to have that match on Raw when we can get two guys or power.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, but, yeah, I mean, we have the bulk of it figured out, I think, and I think both Money in the Bank matches are looking pretty good.
Over on the Raw, do we even get to the Raw, to the men's side yet? Because I feel like we have to, like, finagle. Okay, Drew is not in it, so, yeah, we can just talk about the men's Money in the Bank right now. There's going to be four on the Raw side and then four on the SmackDown side because we have a last chance match coming up next week. But Riddle and a shocking win over Drew McIntyre, which to me says a lot about how they stand with Matt Riddle. He has been top five virtually all year in our top 25, patreon.com/barbershare network. So you have Riddle. You have Ricochet, which was a complete shock to me, but like you want Ricochet in the ladder match, so I get it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final entrant, jog my memory.
John Morrison.
John Morrison beat Randy Orton to get in. It's also somebody else you want in a ladder match who is Money in the Bank ladder match tested. We won't see John Morrison for about another 2 years. Any Money in the Bank. But oh wait, he fucking slapped in that Money in the Bank.
Mm-hmm. Oh
yeah. And I think his other one is like 2010. I want to say he was in that one as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, with those three right now on the Raw side, we're gonna have a last chance match between Randy Orton, Drew, and AJ Styles next week. Is it a shoe-in that Randy's winning that just based off the interaction with Riddle?
I genuinely think so because I think that Jinder and his big heavy dudes are going to go after Drew and take him out so that Jinder can get in because they kind of teased that happening last week. I think he's going to be the obvious target there. And yeah, I think because that they're going to be doing Styles and Omos against the Viking Raiders, probably a Money in the Bank for the Raw Tag titles, that Orton's a virtual lock shoe in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's pretty fair.
The SmackDown side is going to be interesting. I think there's definitely going to be qualifiers for that. And I can see that going literally anything. Because there's no shortage of great wrestlers on SmackDown. Obviously.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you figure...
Big E?
Yeah, you figure Big E's going to be in it. I mean, you can throw Apollo in it, you know?
If you don't get Finn in there,
yeah. I mean, Finn's a guy that could come up and be in the match as well. You know, I think Sami Zayn could be in it. I think Owens is maybe taking a little bit of time off. But
I mean, technically speaking, if they announce him for the match, he could come back at the show.
You know, Shinsuke can be in it. Corbin can be in it.
Yeah, you got a lot of guys that you can throw in. What's going on with Shinsuke and Corbin? It looks like Shinsuke is the king now, but you haven't even done the King of the Ring.
Well, I think they're setting up for a new one at some point when fans get back. They're doing a King of the Ring and a Raw Roulette and some other fun stuff, according to Fightful. So they got some plans. So I'm glad they're keeping,
Raw,
you know.
If you're doing Raw Roulette, you either have to do it in Vegas, which can't be because SummerSlam, not Raw, or Atlantic City. So
yeah.
When are they in Atlantic City?
Nah, I mean.
Well, because they could, technically speaking, I guess they could go to any of the Bohemian Sons if they choose to go. To
yeah,
Bohemian.
They could do that too. You're right. I think I did see Connecticut on that, or Mohegan Sun on that, mm-hmm. like little flyover list. So maybe.
They could also just do it anywhere.
It doesn't matter.
I mean,
to be authentic.
Yeah.
The themes here. Okay, nobody's going to fucking Colorado so they can gamble.
That's
just
true.
To be fair, who's to say that they couldn't just go back to Vegas a couple months later? Just because they have a plan doesn't mean that it has to happen within that first
You know, after, Labor Day or whatever, they don't have any cities planned anyway,
probably do, they just have to announce.
But that's going to be interesting. And
do they
have
a West Coast, Vegas is the most wet it gets, right? I don't even think they've set up anything for California.
I thought they're doing a house shows in L.A. or somewhere in California.
Yeah, I think so. I know they've been to SmackDown before SummerSlam in Phoenix.
As in Phoenix.
Yeah, I just haven't seen anything in California, which, I mean, honestly, California numbers still aren't great. I wouldn't be shocked if you don't go there until SummerSlam, maybe?
Yeah, well, that's why I think they haven't, they're not going to New York yet either.
Well, the numbers in New York are...
No, that's true.
They're getting better.
It seems like they're saving New York for November.
They'll probably do another stadium for Royal Rumble. I don't know, man. I hate that once they do this show at Allegiant Stadium... you've now opened a door really for all of your big four to be inside of a stadium because you can do even a lesser setup at a baseball stadium for Survivor Series if you wanted to, but it also eliminates the possibility of your core arenas, your Madison Square Gardens, your Allstate Arena, Rosemont Horizons. What's another? Historic spot, Air Canada Center. It takes those away from having those big shows. And granted, you can give a Money in the Bank to Toronto or I'm just going to throw out Vengeance because I'm blanking on pay-per-view names. You can do a Vengeance in Chicago. But I don't know. It's something about a Royal Rumble in Madison Square Garden that gives me thrills. Even though we haven't seen it since 2008, something about a garden and the Royal Rumble at the Garden gives me thrills. So I would love for a return to New York to be that over, hey, we're just going to do this Barclays on Raw.
Well, you know what the thing is? I mean, I think WrestleMania and SummerSlam are open for, big stadiums. And I know the Rumble's been there a couple times, but, you're kind of boxed in terms of weather in November and January.
Well,
so
that's why I say you do it in a retractable roof baseball stadium.
Yeah.
Safeco for Survivor Series would make sense.
Then if you start doing that, though, you only have the, same 10 or 15 arena. So I don't know.
But I mean, the Super Bowl only goes to the same
that's true.
Every year anyway. So.
Also fair.
But, no, it's going to be interesting. I'm interested in seeing just kind of where they go returning to touring in general, if house shows come back.
Well, they're doing the Super Shows.
Yeah.
Which I think is going to be the way to go to try and get a good gate.
Yeah.
Not everyone's going to be there all the time. They'll put the big stars on there. By the way, Pierce, I suggested this to Rob the other day. I don't know, if this would happen this coming year or in the future, but they should definitely do a Rumble in Dolphin at the Superdome.
I'm never going to say they shouldn't do anything at the Superdome or in New Orleans because it's a wonderful city. It is an amazing city. I will go to New Orleans tomorrow if I could. So if they do a Rumble at the Superdome, I'm instantly in there. Listen, New Orleans needs something to latch onto, okay? Drew Brees is retired. You got to watch Jameis Winston play quarterback. Jameis Winston and who's the fucking bum they have also?
Taysom Hill.
Yeah. They got to watch them at quarterback. And then, Zion wants out and your basketball team might leave you too. So, I want to give something to New Orleans to be proud of, to be happy of. Give them a fucking pay-per-view.
And, I know they only did it once back at WrestleMania 26, but they do have that arena in what, stadium in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got Chase Field that you can do.
Yep.
They did the Rumble there a couple years ago, yep. And that led to them doing the Rumble in Houston. You also have a brand new park in Arlington, where the Rangers play at. Although I don't see them going to Texas for like a big show like that for a while, at least till after next year's WrestleMania.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're doing Mania and Jerry World right across the street.
So. Yeah.
What other baseball retractable roof stadiums will they be?
I mean, they're not going to.
Is there a possibility of? I guess
they're not going to go to Milwaukee.
No, let's be honest with you, Milwaukee. Nobody's going to go to you. Stop this. Let this go.
They definitely wouldn't do that in November and January. You're asking for trouble.
I mean, I'd go, but
Obviously I'd go because like it's 90 minutes north, and I can just immediately drive back home and not stay in Milwaukee. But like, I don't think if it's a retractable roof, if it's a dome, it's not going to matter. Weather-wise.
I think it would be a tougher sell for people to go to Milwaukee and, like,
well, of course.
It's
a tough sell to go to Milwaukee for a SummerSlam or a Survivor Series. Year-round, it's a tough sell.
I think they could easily, I think they could do Miami at the Marlins Ballpark.
There we go. That's what I was looking for.
Got a roof, they can do that. How many other stadiums have contractual roofs, though?
Do they not have a roof on the Hard Rock?
They do.
Yeah, they do it there too.
They don't have a
SummerSlam at the Hard Rock next year with kick ass. I'm just saying, man.
Yeah.
If we're gonna do Vegas 1 year, do Miami the next.
They should
make SummerSlam the day. Listen, WrestleMania can go around. It could bounce around. You could do WrestleMania at US Bank Stadium. You know, you can do WrestleMania at Lucas Oil Stadium or St. Louis. That's fine too. You can let WrestleMania be that.
Yeah.
SummerSlam, put that in a destination. Put that somewhere where I want to kick it in the summertime. I would be happy with that.
You know, pretty soon you can bring these events to Arlington Heights. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. Very, very soon. Maybe 2030. You don't know. But it's coming. Soon enough, Arlington Heights is going to be the home of All Out, Final Fours, WrestleManias, Super Bowls, Justin Fields touchdowns. This might be a sneak preview. I mean, it'll be up the same day. But shout out to Scott, one-thirds of the founders of the Barber's Chair. My brother's YouTube show, I'm Not Gonna Hold You, debuts today on Hoops and Brews Media on YouTube. And he will be talking to Jarrett Payton, love son of Chicago Bear lore, Walter Payton. And they'll talk about the stadium in Arlington. And maybe we'll get a little bit more insight on what's going on with that stadium. So I'm Not Going to Hold You, hosted by my brother Scott, Hoops and Brews Media on YouTube, debuting today. Just since we're on that subject, I figure I might as well. Now let's go. Well, actually, no, we still got a little bit more from Hell in a Cell we have to talk about. Let's start on SmackDown, actually, because they moved up what we thought was going to be the opener of Hell in a Cell, and they did it on SmackDown, and Roman Reigns demolished Rey Mysterio like we all believed he would. What'd you guys think of this one?
It was good. I mean, I don't know that it would have fit on the pay-per-view as it was. So, you know, it kind of worked out. Like, it was, you know, 10 or 15 minutes or so. And, you know, I like what they did with it. But you got to have big main events on TV as well. And it's fine.
So do you think the last-minute decision was because the match was structured the way it was? Or do you think that Fox asked for it? Or do you think that Roman was just like, yo, I ain't working on Father's Day?
Yeah, see, that's the weird thing.
I got big teacups with my daughter.
Yeah, because, like, you would think if it was, you know, Vince or Fox, they would have given more than, you know, one day notice to, you know, hype it up a little bit. You know, you would have done that last week on SmackDown to kind of set it up.
And I think the fact that there hasn't been any information leaked about why it happened yet suggests to me that this was a decision that was probably made by
Yeah,
I would,
Look at that. The man has power.
Yeah, he has plenty of power and sway now. I think that it was something that was made by him and probably will be kept close to best for a rather long time.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's already been almost a week and we've heard literally nothing.
Well, I know on PW Insider yesterday, they said it was to give something extra to the TV partners and a way to get attention ahead of the company returning to touring.
Okay, you know, which, that's
but again, I would have probably done it a couple more days ahead of time to get more attention because, you know, I don't watch Fox throughout the rest of the week, but I imagine they run commercials for SmackDown, so you would have had that in the commercial. That would have been good, but, you know, it was fine. I mean, it's a good match. I like what they did with it. I don't know if you're going to keep that going or have Roman face Dominic or whatever at Money in the Bank or just have him not work Money in the Bank.
Because Heyman said that they're doing not really like an open challenge, but an open challenge on Friday. Mm-hmm. So maybe not a title match on Friday, but basically requesting that Heyman would come out.
This is where you get Roman Goldberg. No, not yet.
You know what? Give me Shinsuke.
That'd be fun.
Give me Shinsuke and have that open Money in the Bank. Have Boogs come out, do the guitar thing, have the crowd, you know, sing along with Shinsuke's old theme song, get the crowd up and rowdy. It'll be a good time.
That's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea.
No, I like
plus
that.
There's still, I feel like there's still fruit on the vine, right? Because they never really went back to that a couple months ago when, you know, they had the whole thing with Adam Pearce and everything.
Mm-hmm.
No, they haven't. Monday night, after Bobby made work of Drew like we knew he would, we transitioned into a feud now between Bobby and Kofi Kingston. And we got Hell in a Cell on USA on Monday with Bobby taking on Xavier Woods. And this is just another example of that when you put Xavier Woods in there by himself without the New Day, or even if you put him over one of the other two, as we saw a couple years ago in Hell in a Cell, Xavier fucking brings it. And he was awesome. And he's one of those dudes that's gearing up for a King of the Ring run when we do see King of the Ring. And could we be seeing a breakout of Xavier Woods pretty soon?
Oh, yeah. I hope so. I mean, he's very good, and he shows it every time he gets a singles match. I mean, you know, I think that match was fine too.
I think it accomplished what they needed to accomplish, especially the ending angle where they locked Kofi out of Hell in a Cell, which I was talking to somebody and I basically, when I saw the match was happening, I'm like, oh, okay, let's do that and then let's have them abuse Woods in front of Kofi who can't get in the cell and turn this feud up about 11 more notches and we're going full speed ahead now.
I saw, I think it was Vince Russo was mad that Kofi didn't climb to the top or something stupid to look from the top instead of, you get these sites that are like, oh, former WWE writer has complaints, and it's just always Vince Russo, and it sucks.
It sucks. It really does suck, because, like, Vince Russo doesn't fucking care about wrestling. The only reason he purports to care about wrestling is because it's the only thing that's going to get him paid.
Yeah.
So, like, whatever. Yeah, that match fucked. That match was awesome.
Well, Raw in general was very good this week, so, you know.
Yeah. According to Twitter, Raw was good for the first time in a while.
Raw was good. NXT was good. Dynamite.
For once on Raw, there felt like there was an actual refresh.
Yeah.
With the exception of Rhea Charlotte, which I have no problem with continuing because it was always gonna, they basically kind of restacked the deck. Now Drew... not only out of the title picture, but he's out of Money in the Bank for now, and he's going to be out of next week too.
Well, yeah, and you know, I think having Eva lose was a legitimate surprise. I think, you know, it's good. They're doing stuff that people are going to want to see for their first show back, and that's good.
Very, very, very good. Very, very good. We'll skip over who's top, who's going to win Money in the Bank. We'll wait till we see the clearer picture. Diamond Mine debuted on NXT last night. What's it going to be? Is it going to be a new show for the young NXT wrestlers that can't get on main roster? Is it going to be like an offshoot of Evolve? Is it going to be the debut of Tessa Blanchard? Well, happened to be the debut of a new stable headed by Roderick Strong. Managed Bob Boy, Malcolm Bivens. I flipped when I saw Roddy. Even though I had an inkling that Roddy was going to be in this, I flipped when I saw Roddy. I went absolutely bonkers when I saw Stoke. This seems like it's going to be, I don't want to like confine it this way, but it seems like something that's going to thrive in NXT. Wait and see on the main roster. But first night, hot ass debut for the Dynamite.
Oh yeah. And I mean, that's the way to make a debut, really. You know, show up, mess up the main event.
They pulled the Adam Cole.
Well, it's funny though, because it was like, oh, you know, Adam Cole's going to come back and interfere, and then he did, and then it's like, okay, well, maybe they're not doing Diamond Mine, and then boom, you know, I mean, NXT was very good as well, just like Raw.
I agree with you, Pierce, that Diamond Mine feels like something that's absolutely going to thrive in NXT, just because of the fact that they're like the work rate brand, and this is a work rate staple. When you have a guy like Strong, and then you also have Tyler Rust, who they have, you know, growing into his, you know, his position, and Hideki Suzuki is also a great add for them. I know I saw a lot of people flipping out about that. I need to do more research on him, but he seems like he's going to be very good too. And I mean, who doesn't love Malcolm Bivens? He's fantastic, and it's great that they're putting him with heavy hitters, especially someone like Brian.
Yeah,
I think this is going to be great for him. And I also do wonder, simultaneously, if since Undisputed Era is completely disseminated now, and there's no walking back to that, I kind of wonder what this means for a guy like Adam Cole, who may, as a result of this new stable coming up, they're going to be building Roddy up as a, you know, a heel and somebody who's going to be challenging for the Cruiserweight Championships going after Kushida. And Roddy's a guy who can challenge for pretty much any belt. So I wonder if, you know, this will have some sort of impact on where his trajectory goes. And whether I wonder if he's wrapping things up there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah. No, it's going to be interesting. You know, they're going to do Great American Bash and then, you know, build towards the next takeover, which is after SummerSlam. So there's a lot of stuff where it's going to be after, you know, next week that we kind of get a clear picture.
And I think with NXT, you can absolutely tell that they're definitely planning for some people to shuttle up and they're establishing, you know, their new core, who they're going to be putting over and putting in positions to succeed and thrive.
Their champion has also not been featured a whole ton the past couple weeks, which...
Well, also, you know, not on NXT, but he's on main event.
They're also very clearly, to me, turning the Way face, at least the males.
Yeah.
Turning who face?
The Way. So Gargano and Theory are definitely going to be turning face, I think, because Gargano was working like a baby face and getting cheered like one in a tag with Dunn and Lorcan, and they had Cross go after him, so I think that Gargano is... going to be spinning that back to being a baby face, even if he is great dipshit.
Yeah, maybe we'll see. Like, he just has to be a different baby face than he was before.
Yes,
he can't be Johnny Gargano before. So that's my only apprehension to it. But yeah, we'll see. Now let's transition. We got two major. Hold on 1 second. Because a name just came down that passed away. Well, this might not be like a major name to a lot of people, but according to Wrestling Inc., Melissa Coates, who's wrestling in WWE, she's been in NWA and independent circuit, she was on Extreme Dodgeball, she passed away today. Former manager, and I believe she dated Sabu for a while too.
Yeah.
And I want to say we talked about her a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, she did the Master Lock Challenge at Backlash.
That's right. That's where we talked about her. She did the Master Lock Challenge at Backlash, and she failed. We also talked about her because she had to get her leg amputated after some really bad blood clots. So that's according to Wrestling Inc. I don't have a cause of death because that just instantly came down the tubes here. But yeah, Melissa Coates passes away. She was 50.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. Now let's transition into the two big anniversaries that we have today. One, can't even say they intertwined because of the reactions that people had to them, and because these are just two dudes who are just very anti-establishment in, you know, their top part of their careers. Let's start with the former, and that was today, actually, June 23rd, 1996. The King of the Ring was not supposed to be Stone Cold or Steve Austin that won the King of the Ring. A couple of months before, he was the ringmaster, and he had hair and was wearing green trunks. It was supposed to be Triple H, but curtain call happened. Somebody had to be disciplined. It was Triple H. So replacing him, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And it may have been one of the greatest turnabouts in professional wrestling history. Because of that, we got the infamous Austin 316 promo. And he completely lit into Jake Roberts to the point where I'm like, nah, if I was Jake, I'd be really fucking pissed. You bit the Empire off of making fun of me being an alcoholic. But only Steve Austin can make it and then turn it into green.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, obviously just kind of an all-time great promo interview segment. You know, it's not super often you can pinpoint the moment where a guy kind of becomes the guy. But, you know.
But to be fair, they didn't really know it happened.
No, you know, the story is the next night, you know, everyone had Austin 316 signs or whatever. I don't know how much of that is, you know, WWE kind of papering the history a little bit, but
I'm not going to lie. I have not seen that Monday Night Raw. Maybe I'll go back and watch it, but
yeah, I could believe it. But no, you know, obviously a huge moment, and it propelled him to, you know, what he would be the next 5-6 years. Yeah. I mean,
it's a legendary promo and moment. And it did, it started the, you know, the bottle rocket up into the moon. And, you know, I think it was also aided, of course, by his feud and match with Bret Hart at Survivor Series that ensuing November. But obviously this is, you know, even if it's a hindsight thing, it's the moment for Stone Cold Steve Austin. After this, he just launched himself into superstar.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's just... it's really cool stuff, and it's cool that, you know, this is the anniversary. I know they released a handful of shirts for it on WWE Shop. Those are all pretty cool. Yeah, it's a cool thing. I believe that was in Milwaukee, so
it was
cool.
It was the Mecca.
Yes.
So this is my brother's senior year of senior year. Good Lord, it was brother's eighth grade year, and I distinctly remember us buying in VHS taping. Remember, for the kids, we used to have VHS back in the day, and you had to record things. I distinctly remember having two pay-per-views, and that was SummerSlam 1995, ladder match to Shawn and Razor. And the other was the 1996 King of the Ring. And of course, like, as a young Shawn Michaels fan, I'm constantly rewinding the main event with him and Bulldog. I'm watching the Ahmed Johnson Goldust match. Taker was Taker and Mankind's like real first match against each other. And in smack dab in the middle, you got the King of the Ring tournament. And there's Stone Cold Steve Austin having the match with Mark Mero. I remember the bloody mouth that he had, having to leave and get stitches, and then coming back to face Jake the Snake, who got obliterated by Vader, and making quick work of him. And then it's one of those things that when you watch as a kid, it's just embedded in your brain, the confidence, the demeanor that Austin exuded on that stage with Michael P.S. Hayes, Doc Hendricks at the time. You know, you sit there, you thump your Bible, you say your prayers, and it didn't get you anywhere. Talk about John, talk about Psalms, talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, "I just whipped your ass." It's one of those things that, like, I'm not even sure Austin rehearsed it. He probably, like, knew, okay, you know, I might make fun of, you know, his alcoholism, blah, blah, blah. But and he said it, so I can't really, you know, say whether he's bullshitting or not. It's wrestling. People are always bullshitting.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know, he's saying that it's because of the promo that Jake cut before he got to the ring. And it's one of those things where if it's off the cuff, it's even greater. Because how can you come up with something like that completely on the spot and it captivates, it draws in everybody unless you are just a fantastic orator. And then ending it with his other great catchphrase. And yeah. I don't know if that's the first time he ever said it, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so, but if it was, excellent cap off to a moment that stands the test of time in pro wrestling and pop culture, man. So yeah, it is the moment that Steve Austin shot into the stratosphere. Like Rob said, you don't get to pinpoint that for a lot of guys. And then 10 years ago, in a couple of days, I believe it's June 25th, 2011, after CM Punk, one Phil Brooks, disrupted a tables match between John Cena and the winner, R-Truth, Hall of Fame, baby. He sat on the top of the stage and gave a 6-minute scathing promo of WWE that we now know today as the Pipe Bomb. What do you guys remember of this moment? I remember sitting on my bed after freshman year of college and just being like, I looked at my brother, was like, that's not real. It's real, right? It's not. Can't be. No, it is. What do you guys remember from this?
You know, I was out of the wrestling game at this point. I had tuned out for much of 2009. Much or all of 2010. I know I was.
This is your freshman year of college, right?
Yeah, 2010 to 2011 was my freshman year of college.
And wrestling sucked, so like double whammy.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I remember, you know, The Rock showing up got my attention back in February, but I wasn't a consistent watcher. I feel vindicated for that because again, it mostly sucked.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember having it on just because I was home by then, and you know, watching wrestling was just something that I did when I was home, and I did. And when this happened, you know, I was a Punk fan. I had been, even through, you know, being quiet as a wrestling fan 2009 through 2011, I was a Punk fan. Maybe he was cutting this promo on Cena, and I was like, wow, this is pretty fucking great. Whatever, even if it's a work shoot or a shoot, like, hey, this is grabbing my attention. Now I'm going to make sure to watch the following week. And I think that for me, and maybe for a lot of other people, even if they don't care to admit it, today in 2021, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in a bit, it pulled me back into wrestling and helped me be a more consistent viewer in it again. It did. It had that power. And it made me legitimately want to go to Money in the Bank as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know what the thing is? I think it's interesting because everyone's like, oh, you know, that promo was bad. I never liked Punk. And I think a lot of that is hindsight. You know, a lot of people, want to lie about that, you know, like
bullshit.
You liked Punk. You liked that feud. You know, you wanted him to win.
You love you that know. Match. You know, it's a classic. Yeah. You know exactly what it led you to. Even if the payoffs suck.
Well,
but Chicago's crowd is just a bunch of marks. Shut the fuck up.
Well, the payoff is Kevin Nash getting involved, which, you know, right. Got a little convoluted, yeah, but you know, but yeah, I mean, it obviously has its place for reason. And I get, you know, getting a little frustrated with how Punk is now.
Well,
but
my frustration doesn't come with Punk. You know, he's annoying sometimes. Okay. People are annoying. It is what it is. I'd rather Punk be annoying than be like fucking MAGA or QAnon.
Yeah.
Of which he's not.
Yeah.
So if he's annoying, okay, whatever.
But he ain't harming me as a person. I don't care.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well.
And I mean, my problem is just that people think that it's like real.
Yeah.
And that they use it opportunistically and conveniently whenever they do something wrong or whatever, and they just end up quoting it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like,
well,
that to me just gets very stupid. And it's taken on a life of its own that probably never needed to, But I guess that that's just also just the consequence of just it occurring.
I guess so. I mean, you know, like you said, people kind of latch onto it. They latch onto, you know, Triple H said, don't watch anymore. Or, you know, fucking they.
We're going to give you what you want.
Which they did. I mean, but yeah, it's
they
just.
They gave me what I want, so.
Just, you know, posting that picture every time, you know, Naomi loses a match or something is just insane.
Your fucking authority figures are Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville for the last year. Come on now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, obviously it has a place in history. It's part of a great feud. You know, it would be nice if people would... I think it did more for Punk than it did for the company.
Yeah.
You know, because that's kind of like we were talking about. Like we were talking about with Austin just now, you know, that was kind of Punk's moment.
Yes.
I remember being on a, or in an, and I think it was in O'Hare, because I think O'Hare is the only way to get to Toronto. I was in an airport, O'Hare, going to Toronto for my brother's bachelor party. It was the week. Actually, no. This was after. This was after Money in the Bank. A couple days after Money in the Bank. And I'm in the airport, and I'm reading an article on Grantland.com. Shout out to the old Grantland. I think it was by Bill Simmons, but honestly, it might have been by David Shoemaker, because I know David Shoemaker was a heavy part of the original Grantland. But... I'm sitting there reading this piece on CM Punk, and it's on one of the front pages of ESPN, and never in my wildest dreams did I think that CM Punk would have the kind of buzz that he generated off of that one promo alone. And yo, I don't care what you feel about CM Punk now. Like, I'm the guy who's in outside the shows, in the shows. When those CM Punk chants stop, I'm the main motherfucker stopping them.
Yeah.
When they start, I kill them. I think that might have happened at TakeOver Chicago. And I'm just like, hey, yo, cut that shit out. So, like, I understand how annoying that gets in the people who are still adamant about the mistreatment of CM Punk. But we also have to, like, not have revisionist history about this shit. And, yeah, they did CM Punk really dirty. Yeah, CM Punk didn't really take it well. All that stuff is true. And all that can be true. But let's not go back and let's scrub the last 4 years of CM Punk's run in WWE, which, aside from the beginning and some of the pitfalls that WWE gave his way, was a fucking phenomenal 4 year run for CM Punk. And that promo is one of the greatest promos that have ever happened in WWE. I don't have a fucking list in front of my face to be like, okay, that's 3, that's 10, that's 11, whatever. But it, you know, it's up there. It's up there in that conversation with a Hard Times, or with you're talking to the Rolex wearing diamond ring. It's up there.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to, you know, use our personal hate, personal feelings for Punk to try to diminish that. So that's how I feel about that. And I can't believe it's been 10 years, man. That was an interesting time in life for me. And to realize that, damn, that was 10 years ago. Shit, I'm almost 30. That's wild. Let's go back to the year 2005 when I was 13. And let's talk about the week in professional wrestling. We have two more draftees, one on Raw, one on SmackDown. The one on Raw is very cool. And Vengeance 2005, which, like I said, was a very sneaky good pay-per-view. We'll talk about that when we get there. But I believe we have some current day news to talk about.
Yes. So, as always, top 5 movies in America this week. We actually have 3 new entries into the top 5. Number 5, making about $10 million, I'm sorry, is Land of the Dead.
See, I don't remember that.
Lane of the Dead?
Land.
Oh, Land. Okay. Yeah, no, I don't remember that either.
Number 4, making about $13 million, was Herbie Fully Loaded.
Wow.
God.
Number 3, dropping down from number 2 last week, making $16.8 million, was Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Number two, making over $20 million, was Bewitched.
I remember that. Nicole Kidman, right?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah. And retaining its spot at number one is Batman Begins, which made $27.5 million.
As it should have. I don't think I've ever watched Bewitched with Nicole Kidman and Will Ferrell. We should have another old 1960s TV show to movie remake coming up in the next couple weeks. And I'll save that for when we get to the box office draws for that week. But yeah, I remember this being just a fucking lambasted movie. That's really all I remember about it.
Yeah.
The one we get in a couple weeks ain't better. Like, actually, no, we did. We got it a couple weeks ago. That was The Honeymooners. Sorry, The Honeymooners came out before Bewitched. And I'm not shocked that we didn't put The Honeymooners in any of those top fives. Because it's terrible.
God, I forgot about that.
I forgot about that, too.
It's good. It's a very forgettable movie.
And then the top five songs in America remain the same. The order is just a little bit different. Oh by Ciara featuring Ludacris dropped down to number five, just a little bit by 50 Cent dropped down to number four. Don't Funk With My Heart jumped up from five to three. Holla Back Girl retains its spot at number two. And once again, We Belong Together by Mariah Carey is still number one.
Yes.
Stranglehold, baby.
All right. Let's get into Raw.
Yes.
From June 20th, 2005, Phoenix, Arizona. I believe it's the U.S. Airways Center at this point.
Yes, U.S. Airways Center, yeah.
John Cena's here to open the show. He's got no problem with what Jericho did last week. It's the Wild West. If you want to do something, you do it. But he tells Jericho to be careful because he ain't seen nothing yet. And he calls Jericho out. Christian can also come out. But then Muhammad Hassan Daivari come out instead. They say that, you know, Cena's a typical American complaining when he has nothing to complain about. Hassan was welcomed to Raw with hatred and prejudice, and each week it's getting worse for him. He got screwed by Austin last week. He's still undefeated on Raw and constantly looked over. Cena said people don't hate Hassan because he's Arab American. They hate him because he's asshole American, which I didn't know you could say on television at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, I did not either.
But, asshole. Yeah, I mean, usually they censor. I mean, I know they chant it, but usually it gets a little censored. But this is like 8 o'clock. This is the beginning of Raw, too. Yeah. So.
Well, no, it's 9 o'clock.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They could have gotten away with it then. Mm-hmm. Cena said he came for a fight, so we'll fight Hassan tonight. Since Jericho and Bischoff didn't come out, Jericho and Christian didn't come out, then Bischoff comes out and says that Cena will face Muhammad Hassan tonight. And then we come back from break. Bischoff is in the ring to announce the next draft pick, but first, Bischoff wants to bring out one of the crown jewels of last year's draft, Shelton Benjamin. Jerry Lawler says that Shelton won him over, even though he didn't think he would, which, I mean, come on. Fucked up. Come on.
Yeah.
Shelton says that he's going to face whoever the draft pick is, and it's Carlito.
Very cool.
It is very cool. So Carlito comes out, and as everyone remembers, he was the winner of the United States Championship in his first match on SmackDown. So will Luck strike twice for him?
You know, or Lightning strike twice? I do want to give them credit for realizing that no one cared about this Matt Morgan thing and just ending it. I mean, not to get too far ahead, but Matt Morgan's not going to have a job anymore in a couple weeks.
No, and also I think it's them also recognizing. I know that, you know, perception, whatever. Mm-hmm. They did do a good job of balancing the talent, but you know, when someone gets really good, they put them on Raw.
Yeah,
the premier show for them. And Carlito has obviously impressed pretty much everybody at this point. He's getting very over.
Mm-hmm.
He's indicative in this match as well, and you know he's doing all that he needs to do.
Yeah. Yeah, really good match. Shelton goes for a German suplex at the end, but Carlito rolls him up and uses the ropes and gets the win. So we got a new Intercontinental Champion.
We do. So Lightning did strike twice. Carlito now won his first Intercontinental Championship on his first night of Raw, just like he won the United States Championship on his first night on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
So a nice little accolade.
Yeah.
And once again, another prime example of them realizing that he's doing really well. He's progressing very well, and he's, you know, earned his keep.
Yeah. They show superstar Billy Graham in the crowd. That's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Maria interviews Carlito. She asks some dumb questions, then he takes over. Said just like his first night on SmackDown, he became a champion. His first night on Raw, he's going to be the best Intercontinental Champion WWE has ever seen. And he spits the apple at Maria. You know, good
that
stuff there.
Would also
don't they eventually have a thing?
Carlito and I think Trish did next year, which is really awkward. But yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that's not great.
It's really weird.
Visser is in action against Simon Dean. Simon says Visser looks ridiculous because he wears a giant smoking jacket now. Simon calls him Huge Hefner and said he didn't know it was possible for anyone in Phoenix to be fatter than Charles Barkley.
That's horrible.
Visser squashes him, and Lillian says they've been moving fast, but she wants to move faster, and this Sunday in Vegas, he's going to hit the jackpot. Well, good luck.
Yes, good luck. That's what I have to say.
Todd Grisham is with Chris Jericho. Jericho says he's interested in wrestling again because it's exciting now. He hasn't had a one-on-one title match in 3 years, so he took matters into his own hands last week with Cena. When he's champion, his album sales are going to go through the roof. Christian says Jericho's music and Cena's music both suck, and he's going to win the title at Vengeance.
You know what, Christian? Good call.
Yeah?
So Kurt Angle went backstage to visit Eric Bischoff, and he said he was going to show everyone here who the man was. And he's going to dedicate this Sunday's win against Shawn Michaels to Eric Bischoff, who will, he will shake his hand.
Yes.
Shake the hand up, I should say. There we go.
Yeah.
So we now move on to the wedding. Edge and Lita.
Yeah. Edge comes out looking ridiculous. Lita comes out. You know, they play a video. Snitsky gives a speech.
Ends up being a poem.
Yeah. Edge and Lita exchange their vows, and then they do the Speak Now Forever Hold Your Peace part, and Matt Hardy's music hits. It doesn't come out.
Commentary was very particular about being like, oh my god, what's going on? The crowd's going crazy, but they never actually mentioned it by name.
Just the second best usage of playing someone's music but not having them come out, we'll see in the next couple months.
It's no month, it's next month.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Can't wait.
Because here's the thing about July is that 1 million things happen.
July is a ridiculous month in the
company. Edge says that they planned it and they tricked the fans. They keep up and the priest keeps reading, and then Kane's head pops out from under the ring.
Lord Jesus Christ.
That was good. Edge picks up Lita and they get out of there, and Kane destroys the ring and tombstones the priest.
Not the priest.
Todd Grisham interviews Christy about Victoria. Christy says that Victoria's a bitch and she's looking forward to their vengeance match. Victoria comes up and hits Christy in the head with a bottle and knocks her out.
She was right that she is a bitch.
Yeah. We come back from the commercial and Christy doesn't know her name or today's date. Not ideal.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was good.
That was good shit.
Then we get John Cena against Muhammad Hassan for the WWE Championship. Cena gets the win pretty easily, which... I don't know. I mean,
the territory beating.
You know, he had an undefeated streak, but, you know, given what's coming next and what the plans were for him, it made sense. You know, we're not going to get there, but, you know. Jericho attacks Cena after the match on the stage.
So does Christian, and then they both kind of tussle, but then they both decide to go back after Cena again.
Yes. We get Kurt Angle against Batista. Couple minutes in, Triple H and Flair come down, start beating up Batista for the DQ. Shawn Michaels comes out to even the odds and help Batista. And Bischoff comes out and makes a tag match between Triple H and Angle and Batista and Michaels. The only unfortunate thing is we will never get another Angle and Batista match.
Yes, and this is like the only one that ever really happens.
It is, yeah.
It is. It's the only one.
Yeah. So move to the main event, which is Triple H and Angle against Michaels and Batista, which, I mean... it's good stuff right there.
Very much so.
Michaels plays the babyface in peril, and Batista gets hot tag. Michaels and Angle brawl to the back, so it's down to Triple H and Flair, and Batista out there. Flair comes in, gets a spine buster. Triple H hits pedigree from the distraction and gets the win to end the show. So
Triple H is on top.
Mm-hmm. All right, yes. Do we still have basketball?
We do. We do still have basketball. On Tuesday, June 21st, the Pistons beat the Spurs 95-86 to force a Game 7, which occurred on Thursday, June 23rd, the day of SmackDown. And the Spurs won Game 7, won the NBA Finals with an 81-74 victory.
Yeah, that's very
garish. But, yeah, they did win I'm not sure who won finals MVP. I think it's Tim Duncan.
Probably Tim Duncan.
Probably Tim Duncan. Like, it's always Tim Duncan. Yeah, I think Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan won the first two. I want to say the 2007 one may have been Tony Parker, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it was Tony Parker. Tony Parker was 2007, and then Kawhi.
Yeah, it
was 2014. So yeah, the first three were all won by Tim Duncan, and like I said last week, rightfully so, Tim Duncan at this point in time is the best player in the NBA. And I this is coming from somebody that hated watching the Spurs as a kid because they weren't the flashy team. They weren't, you know, they weren't eye popping like a Vince Carter led team or you know, doing things like Shaq and Kobe were doing, but they were fundamentally sound. They always had guys who stepped up and they won. And their anchor was Tim Duncan, who was more boring than a fucking cardboard box. But, you know, we like to have revisionist history on that. And me, a KG fan, would love to say Kevin Garnett is the greatest power forward in NBA history. He's not. It's Tim Duncan. It's absolutely Tim Duncan. I believe this is the last time we'll hear Al Michaels call in NBA Finals. Maybe he did the year after, but I think
the
Mike Breen started 2006. That's right.
He came over in 06. Yeah, so this is the last NBA Finals for Al Michaels.
Yeah, he did well, he didn't do the first one on ABC. That was Brett. And then he did 2004, 2005. And then he gets traded to NBC for a cartoon rabbit. So.
All right, any other things to this finals? No, I think that's it to this NBA season.
I guess we'll get to the lottery and all that stuff when it happens, or is a lottery this week, because this was a game seven, so it means it was Sunday. Lottery would be Wednesday, or the draft would be Wednesday, I guess.
What I see here is the draft took place on June 28th, and I'm not sure when the lottery occurred.
Well, the lottery would have been last year. I'm sorry, I meant to say the draft.
Yeah, but there was big news in the NBA on June 21st. The NBA and the NBPA agreed to a new collective bargaining agreement, which averted a potential lockout, and among the terms of the agreement was an age limit, which will require American players to be 19 or older on draft pick. So, enter the one and done.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty historic moment that occurred that week. In addition to that, in other sports news, let's see what happened this week. Birdie Kim won the U.S. Women's Open. She's from South Korea. Patrick Harrington won his second PGA Tour win of the season at the Barclays Classic with a score of 10 under, which occurred out in Rye, New York. Let's see here if there's anything else that occurred. Oh, I wanted to bring this up because I seen it in the current events. This was a big week for video games in 2005 because Battlefield 2 and Destroy All Humans came out this week.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever played Destroy All Humans. I mean, I played Battlefield, but I don't like Battlefield like that, like compared to Call of Duty. Destroy All Humans, that's been pretty popular the last 15, 16-something years, so I see that.
Yeah, those are both very fun games, the Destroy All Humans games. Big fan of both of those. Yeah, we have anything else here?
Not much happened that week in baseball. The Devil Rays lost. They were up 10-2 against the Yankees, but they lost 20-11.
I mean, yeah.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
For the 2005 Devil Rays and the 2005 New York Yankees.
Yeah, it was the second time in franchise history that the team was ahead by 8 or more runs and lost by 9 or more. No other club in baseball history achieved this dubious distinction. Devil Rays have now accomplished a feat more than twice with their 1990
beat
the Indians, so they've done it twice. Mm-hmm. My God!
All right.
That was about it that week. It was a pretty tame week.
Yes. So on to SmackDown from Tucson.
Yes.
From the Tucson Convention Center, not from McHale.
Correct.
Randy Orton's out to open the show, says that he's a legend killer. That's a reputation that he's earned. Made a career out of making history. Undertaker took advantage of an injury that Randy suffered at WrestleMania, so he couldn't make history that night, but now he's getting his revenge. Undertaker will feel the wrath of the RKO, then the Titantron kind of starts glitching out. Shows the end of the WrestleMania 21 match on loop. And then the gong hits and the lights come back on and Undertaker's behind Randy, but Randy leaves the ring and says that this time they're going to do it on Randy's terms. Then he gets knocked over by an explosion on the stage. Yes.
And so we move forward here after that to Joey Mercury versus Heidenreich. And we are continuing on this path. Michelle McCool came downward and took out Molina, who kept interfering. But while the ref was looking at that, Nitro came in and kicked Heidenreich in the head to get the win for Joey Mercury.
Damn, man. Heidenreich needs a friend.
He does. He does need a friend. Rey Mysterio said that he wanted to end things with Eddie Guerrero last week, so he went after him and hit him with a chair over and over. However, Eddie got away. That opened up a side of Rey that he didn't know existed. And he isn't going into tonight to win a match. He's going for redemption.
You know what the thing is about this? Everyone remembers it because it's like, oh, that's ridiculous. They had a ladder match for custody of a child. But the feud itself is just, it takes it to another level. That's how they first place. I mean, it's very good stuff from both of them.
Yes. I completely agree. They're both on a tear right now.
Yeah. JBL goes to Teddy Long's office. JBL heard that he's presenting a new championship tonight. And JBL says that it should go to him. And Teddy Long knows that JBL beat Undertaker last week, and he has a good point. But Teddy Long has a big announcement to make later in the ring.
Intriguing.
Yes.
And then we get Chavo Guerrero versus Paul London for the Cruiserweight Championship. But shortly into the match, music hits. Out on a lawnmower come Juventud Guerrero, making his first WWE appearance, I believe.
Yes.
And Psychosis and Super Crazy, of course, we saw 2 weeks ago at ECW One Night Stand. Came out, they beat down both Paul London and Chavo Guerrero. And Juventud and them cut a promo about how they are Mexico.
No, maybe if you gave them a less stupid name and not the lawnmowers, they would have been fine because it's a good promo and all of them can work.
It's a good promo, yeah. Exactly.
So,
no, they weren't just lawnmowers. They were Juan Deers.
Yeah. I mean, like.
The Mexican limousine.
Like, you know. I know everyone in current day wants to say that every new WWE gimmick is a failure the minute it happens, but this one, you know, you can tell this one from the start isn't going to work.
I don't want to say all of that, because I do remember the Mexicools being very popular.
Yes, they were.
It's just, we don't look back on it that well because we've grown.
Yeah,
but we understand, like, hey, we didn't need a group of Mexicans coming out on a lawnmower. I honestly think if you just called them the Mexicals and, you know, just had them come out regular and be cruiserweights, it probably would have been fine to talk about in hindsight. But no, it's not good to talk about now because, like, you know, we're more understanding of the racial overtones here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're three fine fucking workers. All three of them are wonderful workers. But, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I mean, something way more offensive is going to happen on SmackDown in weeks anyway, so, you know.
Yeah, and there's going to be an even more offensive character coming to Raw very soon, so.
Yes.
Who was Mexican? Who legitimately was Mexican?
And is in this match.
Yes. Oh, man. JBL's in the ring, says it is morning in America, and Teddy Long should come out and name him champion. He always wins, and that won't change tonight. Things are back to normal. Booker T comes out. JBL thanks Booker for coming out to shake his hand and congratulate him for being named champion. Booker says that's not why he's out there and no one should be named champion. They should fight for it. Benoit comes out and JBL thanks him for being the voice of reason. Benoit snatches the mic and says there won't be a one-on-one match for the title. He's proposing a triple threat match. JBL says that he should be champion. No one's going to convince him otherwise. And Big Show comes out. Says that either it'll be a fatal four-way or Benoit and Booker and him will have a triple threat after they all beat JBL up. Teddy Long comes out and says it's actually a special five-man challenge match next week between these four and The Undertaker. The winner will be the new champion. And then Muhammad Hassan comes out. He is the new SmackDown draft pick. And can't believe he's being treated the same that he was treated on Raw. He's still undefeated. He should be in the match. And Teddy Long agrees with him. So we have a six-man match next week for the new SmackDown Championship.
Indeed. And then after this, we get Big Show versus Muhammad Hassan. Unfortunately, Matt Morgan came out to join commentary. And Nick Patrick went down. Morgan took a chair to the ring. Big Show punched it into Morgan's face, chokeslammed him. Hassan got the chair, hit Big Show with it for the win.
Yes. You know.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Admittedly, good booking here to keep Hassan, I guess, quote unquote, undefeated. We saw him lose on Monday.
Yes.
Steve Romero was with Eddie Guerrero, and he said that he doesn't know, or Ray doesn't know what he's capable of.
Yes. It's time for the main event.
This is fantastic.
Eddie Guerrero against Rey Mysterio. Yeah, they got like 25 minutes. Yeah, it's very good stuff. You know, Eddie went for Three Amigos late in the match, and Rey went for 619, but Eddie avoided it, finished the Three Amigos, went for the Frog Splash. Rey moved out of the way. Eddie went for a powerbomb. Then Rey got the 619 again, hit the West Coast Pop, and Eddie still can't beat him. So, you know, that was SmackDown.
Yep, that was SmackDown. Dios
mío. All right. So Raw, SmackDown in the books. Let's talk about Vengeance 2005. From the Thomas and Mack Center, Las Vegas, Nevada. One thing I do want to point out about this pay-per-view is they don't do this anymore, obviously. They have money to make and, you know, everything has to be budgeted. But they don't do sets like they do here anymore that completely fit the theme, whether it's the pay-per-view or the location of the pay-per-view itself. Remember, you know, we're going to talk about it next year with WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
They did it this past year with Hollywood. But yeah, I thought the stage for Vengeance 2005, and I love playing with it on, I want to say it was 07, because usually around like, for the SmackDown versus Raws, they usually cut it off at like, June-ish.
Yeah.
So it may have been in SVR 06, but I think it was in SVR 07. But it's one of my favorite sets that they've ever done for a pay-per-view.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's remarkably good.
So we open with a shot of the strip. So, you know, you got to do that in Vegas. Mm-hmm. We have a three-man booth tonight where Coach is joining King and JR.
And this is going to be something that happens quite frequently for the remainder of, like, the entire year.
Yeah.
Because I know that when Joey Styles eventually joins, Coach and King are still with him. So that three-man booths on Raw are pretty much here to stay from this point on.
Mm-hmm. We start the action with Carlito against Shelton Benjamin, which it's a good opener. You know, that's what you want to do. Those are two guys you want to just have go out there and do their thing. Shelton goes for the Stinger Splash, but Carlito sees him coming and pulls the turnbuckle cover off, and Shelton hits it. Carlito pins it. It's a good finish.
Yeah, it's a good finish. Good way to even keep Benjamin protected.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, things start to descend in that.
Yes.
But we'll get there when we get there.
We move on to Christy Hemme against Victoria. I mean, they start brawling right away, you know. Victoria, I think, did what she could to make this match good.
She did what she could.
You know, Christy went for a sunset flip at the end, and Victoria just kind of sat down and used the ropes and got the pin. So, just moving along here.
Mm-hmm. Todd Grisham was backstage with John Cena, who said that he still feels like the new kid on Raw. And when you're the new kid, you're targeted. He got jumped in his tag match and got jumped in the last match. Tonight, it's all business. Christian wanted a shot. Jericho thinks being champ will help sell records. Cena fought like hell to get it, and he fought like hell to keep the championship.
Yes.
So, you know, just classic John Cena.
Yeah.
You can tell where he's headed.
Yes. Then we move on to Kane against Edge. You know, they start brawling right away. They do a She's a Crack Whore chant at Lita.
Lord.
Which you can't do. And, you know, Lita was on Renee Young's podcast this week, and she was like, you know, I considered quitting about this whole thing. It didn't feel like people were treating, you know, Matt and Edge the same way as they treated her, and like even to this day.
I truly would not have blamed her one bit if she did. I mean, maybe not.
No, well, because ultimately, what did she do wrong? And I guess it depends on your, you know, morals on, you know, but they weren't
even not really what did she do wrong. She knows what she did wrong, but what did you do to deserve the vitriol that she received? I haven't listened to it yet. That's why I didn't put it in the rundown. I'm busy as hell. And I'm sure we talk about it more over the next, really when that debuts, which shouldn't really be that far.
July 11th.
I was there.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm sure we're going to talk about it more then. But yeah, to me, it's a Mortis. What does she do to deserve the vitriol and anger from a predominantly male crowd that probably was just looking to take it out on a woman in the first place?
Yeah, well,
it's even if, you know, she did something wrong when it comes to, you know, this relationship.
None of your business.
Exactly. It's nobody's business.
Well, one of the parties is also fanning the flames. So
that too, which again is why I say, like, when you have, you know, very toxic happenings when it comes to men, other toxic men join in. It's like a fucking summer camp for toxicity, I guess.
Yeah. So Snitsky comes down and gets on the apron, but Kane knocks him off. Lita comes in the ring with a chair. Kane was going to choke slam her, but he let her go, put the chair around her neck instead. The ref was helping Lita get out of it. Snitsky came back in, hit a big boot on Kane, but it only got two. Lita got on the apron, then Snitsky went on the top rope, but missed Kane. Edge went to hit Kane with the briefcase, but hit Snitsky instead. Then Kane chokeslams Edge for the win. It wasn't very good, you know.
It wasn't very good, but I mean, you know, I think it was booked, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about Kane is he wrestled for 20 years and doesn't have many good matches. That's something you realize.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's Kane's signature match?
I want to say WrestleMania 14 or 20?
Yeah, I mean, and.
But, like, even then, like, that's not a classic.
No, I mean, the first blood match with Austin isn't bad, I guess.
It's not bad,
but
it's obviously, for a while, this is the only title reign.
Like, you know, the match with Triple H where he has to unmask is pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, I mean, he's a guy, like, you know, people say it about The Undertaker too, where it was a lot of character, but The Undertaker had at least a handful of good matches where Kane just really rode the character.
Yeah.
I mean, good for him. I mean, it worked, but.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels with Todd Grisham, Kurt Angle guaranteed he'd be the first guy to make Shawn tap out twice. Michael says he doesn't know if they can top their WrestleMania 21 match, but vengeance will be his.
Yes.
And then we move on to Kurt Angle against Shawn Michaels.
And you made the claim that you think that at this point in time, Kurt Angle is the best professional wrestler in the world.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's even close. In 2005, he's very good.
That's interesting only because...
Well, it's an argument you could have made, you know.
Just because of the emergence of... Joe and, I guess Styles, I guess you could say Bryan Danielson at that point, Punk, but I mean, Angle was as good as anyone.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you know, I get your point, but you know, you saw the Michaels match that we watched before, you know, the Eddie match, even the match with Cena at No Way Out is very good.
Yeah.
The match with Flair that we're going to watch next week is very good.
He has not missed once this year.
No.
The Booker stuff was not really, fault,
yeah, I mean, but yeah. So Kurt goes for the ankle lock, but Michaels rolls through and sends Kurt into the ref. Angle sends Michaels over the top rope, and Shawn lands right on his leg, comes back in, and Kurt puts him in the ankle lock in the middle of the ring. But Shawn's able to crawl close enough to the corner to roll Kurt into the ring post. And he hits sweet chin music, but Kurt kicks out, and then Kurt goes the top rope for some reason. He gets sweet chin music as he's coming down, and Michaels gets the win. So they're at 1-1 right now.
They are. They'll be 1-1 for a long while.
Well, yeah, because Shawn has other stuff going on for the next couple months.
Sure does.
Coach leaves his post to go interview Batista. Coach said if it wasn't for poor officiating at Backlash, Triple H should be champion right now. Batista looks scared of Hell in a Cell. Batista said he's not scared of anything, and tonight is for every time Triple H stabbed him in the back or hit him with a sledgehammer. Triple H left to kill him to take the title from him, and Triple H comes up and they...
I thought that was weird. I really thought that was weird. Like, even back then, I felt like they probably separated two parties often, but like, to have them go face-to-face like that way before the match, too. It's not like it's next.
Yeah.
It's already 3 segments away. I was very surprised that they had to go face-to-face. I totally forgot about that.
Yes. So we move on from that to Lillian Garcia in the ring. She wants Viscera to come out. She talks for a while and sings a song and asks Isser to marry her. Before he can answer, the Godfather comes out, which I forgot about this part.
I really did.
With the hoe train. Said someone's got to do something about this. When they heard Visser was coming to Vegas, the girls couldn't wait to get a piece of him. And then he thinks it over and leaves with them. So,
poor Lillian.
Yeah, you know what? That was fun. That's good to see the Godfather.
Yeah,
always.
Then it's time for Christian against Jericho against Cena for the WWE title. Let's kind of get right to it here. They obviously end up outside. Jericho takes a DDT on the floor. We get a Tower of Doom, you know.
Yeah, is this one of the first iterations of this in WWE?
Yeah.
I was going to say, they definitely been watching their TNA games this week before at Slammiversary. They did one in their opening next match.
Yes. You know, the thing is, it's clear that Cena's not going to lose, but they did a good job with some of these false finishes.
Really,
and
did.
I think the actual finish where, you know, he gets Christian up for the FU and then swings him into Jericho to take Jericho out is good stuff, too.
Yes.
And, you know, it's on to whatever's next for John Cena and whatever's next for these two.
Yes.
Well, whatever's next for John Cena, I think, is whatever's next for Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's true.
Christian.
We'll find out about Christian.
We will.
Oh, yeah, Cena does stay working Jericho, and then Jericho leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Road Warriors have a DVD coming out. Looks pretty good.
Yeah, let's hope that's all. Let's hope that's all they're doing with the Road Warriors. Not
in fairness,
up a legacy or anything.
In fairness, it was a very good DVD, but, they...
Great DVD. To me, it's one of the best DVDs they've ever done.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed.
And then it's time for the main event, Triple H against Batista. And... I think you knew, like, 5 minutes in when they got a chain that they were going to...
Oh, this is going to get violent.
They're going to get violent. And they did. I like the spine buster into the post, into the cell. That
yes,
was cool.
That was cool.
Triple H pulls out a steel chair wrapped with barbed wire, hits Batista with it, and then Batista gets it and hits Triple H with it and rakes it across his head.
Yeah, hit him in the face.
Triple H gets the sledgehammer a little bit later, but Batista punches him before he can use it. Yes. He gets it back and covers Batista. Batista kicks out at two. Batista gets the sledgehammer and goes to hit Triple H, but he counters with a punch with the chain. Batista kicks out at two again. Batista gets the steps into the ring and sets him in the corner and just bashes Triple H's head off of them. Batista goes for Batista bomb, but Triple H hits a low blow and a pedigree. Batista kicks out again. Triple H sets up the pedigree on the stairs, but gets spinebustered onto the stairs. And Batista goes for the Batista bomb, but Triple H gets the sledgehammer up with him, but Batista sees it, just kind of moves his head, and hits the Batista bomb for the victory.
That was an interesting flashback, because if I recall correctly, Triple H did that spot against The Undertaker at WrestleMania 17, where he had the sledgehammer when the Taker was going for a last ride and hit him in the head.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is one of the more violent sub-matches that they've ever done.
Yeah, that's a very good sub-match.
Really good. Yeah, I forgot it being this good.
The last match these two are going to have for quite a while.
Quite a while.
Yeah. Who was our King of the Ring?
I think probably Batista. I mean, you know, Cena kept his title as well, but... Yeah.
Unless you want to give it to Mike.
Or Carlito won a title.
Carlito won a title and retained the title in the same week.
Yeah.
That's actually a very good point. You make a very strong point. We'll go with Carlito. How about that? Anything else that we should probably get to before we get up out of here?
No, I don't think so. You know, I'm just really excited for July and, you know, kind of going into the summer. It's just going to be very good stuff for us in 2005 here. You know, SmackDown's finally on Peacock. So we got that going for us.
Yep.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. It's it's a good time for the company.
Get red hot.
And I also think, you know, current day, the product's about to get good again, too.
Yeah.
So,
nice.
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Cannot wait for us to get back in front of fans so we can do this thing proper. Let's move on. Let's get out of here. So we have a playoff game to finish. I am at Cameron Santo. Rob's at RobinO'Neill31. Chris is at Chris Novak. At BarbersChairNet on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook.com/BarbersChairDigital. Sign up for the Patreon. $10 will get you WWE Top 25, which I see in about a week and change. We'll have to get up for a new one. But you can expect it after 4th of July. We're not going to, you know, give you wrestling shit 4th of July weekend. Come on now. you can get episodes of Summer Sessions. We'll be coming back. So $10 will get you to the All Access tier of that. I'm going to get out of here, try to get me some food, and then watch the rest of this playoff game. You've been listening to Ruthless Aggression. Not sure what happens next week. Actually, no, we got the final four selections in the draft. 2 for Raw, 2 for SmackDown. So we'll talk about who's moving, who's shaking, the fallout from Vengeance, and all that on next week's episode of Ruthless Aggression. For Rob, for Chris, I am Pierce. We'll see you guys next week.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.